everyone. This is your host, Mark Jeunesse, and this is episode 373 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. So, I was perusing on Reddit, and I think in one of the art subreddits I follow, I saw this little comic that somebody was putting together, an artist by the name of Terry Belle, which I hope I'm getting his name correct. But you know, last names are hard. It's I-B-E-L-E. My last name is never pronounced correctly, even when people hear me, even though I pronounce it somewhat differently than its actual pronunciation, just to make it a little bit easier for people, but they still get it wrong. Anyway, Terry Belle posted on Reddit this little, I guess, webcomic, if you want to call it, that he's been doing for the past 100 or so days, where he does a panel each day. And he's through 101 days, maybe 102 now, by the time of this recording, which is, what, the 26th or the 25th of May? I don't know. It's Friday. It's Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Who remembers that song? Does anyone remember it? Of course people remember it. But he put together this little webcomic, this little panel, daily panel thing that he decided to do after, I think, just planning to do a few panels or so, and then enjoyed it so much that he decided he's going to do it for an entire year. Put all of them up to date on Imgur and put it on Reddit. And I saw it and kind of just fell in love with it because it is incredibly delightful. It's this story about a mouse and egg, and it's really weird. It starts off very, very innocent and simple and then gets way out of hand very quickly. It is not a story for children. Definitely not for children, but I highly recommend checking it out. He posts the panels on Instagram. I'm not sure if he posts them anywhere else, but you can see them every day on Instagram. And I definitely recommend going into the comic without knowing anything about what happens. But I'm going to go through this entire comic up to where it's left off so far, picture by picture almost, and describe it, because I just think it is so amusing. And if you're someone who's not willing to check out this little thing about an egg and a mouse, then maybe my weird description of it will be. So starts off with an egg in a little house, and he's just looking out his little front door window. Sky is blue. And then he opens the door. He's like, hey, everybody. Hey, you know, how's it going? Talking to you, the looker. Then he gets out of his house, closes the door behind him, and then has this really smug look on his face. Like, look at me. I'm so awesome. He's got a stupid little curly hair on his head. And then this bird comes down and starts singing. And he's like, oh, hey, bird. And then they start singing together. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And then the bird goes away. He's like, bye, bird. Then he's just walking along, gets off the grass onto the beach. And there's a bag of chips with a little mouse's ass poking out of it. And there's also a little seashell on the ground, which seems innocuous. Like, whatever, just a shell. No big deal. He trips over the bag. Or seemingly, I don't know if he trips over the bag or just trips and then falls on the bag. Either way, the mouse is shocked and surprised, and while holding his chip, he gets almost just flattened by this egg, and his chip is destroyed. It breaks in half. Still a perfectly good chip. Now he's got two of them, but you know, he's pretty angry about this. So, while holding one half of the chip, he gets on top of the egg, which no longer actually looks like an egg, because an egg cannot contort like that. An egg is always round-ish, oval-ish. He punches the egg, and man, that egg just took a real beating with that punch. It's like a super punch. And the wallet the egg had, wherever he had, because he has no pockets, he's not wearing any clothes, it just comes flying out of somewhere. And then the mouse decides, you know what? I'm going to rob this egg for ruining my chip. And despite the wallet seemingly having more than one bill in it, it looks like the mouse only grabs a bill, and then the wallet is empty. And, you know, the egg is starting to kind of just recompose himself, and the mouse is now seemingly long gone. The egg sees his wallet is empty. He's like, what happened? And he sees the egg. He sees the mouse walking away with his money. He's like, that ain't gonna work. He picks up that shell, throws it at the mouse. Direct hit. Knocks him out. Doesn't exactly knock him out, just knocks him on his feet. And then he drops the money. And of course, there's actually a little guy inside the shell. He grabs the money and scurries away into the sea or the ocean or the lake or whatever that body of water is. And now both the mouse and the egg have no money. They look at each other. They're like, you suck. But then they're like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we work together? Work together to do what? I don't know. Maybe get that money back? That's what I assumed. But then they just keep walking and walking and walking, get to a city, keep walking and walking until they see a little drain on the side of the road, which if you've seen the movie It, you know you definitely want to go inside drains because there's nothing bad down there. Or if you've ever played a Ninja Turtle arcade game, you know that there's nothing wrong in the sewers. It's perfectly fine down there. So the mouse jumps in there and he's like, come on, egg, come on, egg. And the egg's like, okay, whatever. And you get to see his little butt. And this is where the art kind of starts to get a bit more personality, or just it reminds me a bit of the art in a way, like the Ren and Stimpy. And I'm sure other shows do it too, but just that kind of, it's cutesy, but then there's this little bit of crassness to it. And then I could see his ass cheeks, crassness, ass inside grass. But, you know, I'm thinking maybe stuff like Adventure Time does this as well. But, you know, you just have like, oh, these cute little butt cheeks. But it's still weird seeing butt cheeks in something that looks like it's very kiddie. But the mouse pulls him into the sewer, and then he starts riding him. He's standing on his butt cheeks. You know, with a little paddle that he got from I don't know where. And he's just swimming through this filthy water, and then tentacles come out, and it looks like it's going to destroy the egg. But then, you know, that mouse, he's quite capable. He just destroys. He just beats that octopus or whatever it is into submission. They find some grates, and the mouse finds a little clicker button. A remote, and presses the button on it, and voila, we see Mouse City, Mouse Village, and it's this very elaborate city under the streets of whatever city it is. And this particular picture, and these are all watercolor images, is very, very pretty. I really like it. That's where I was like, oh man, this is really pretty. And then, you know, they have a welcome line for him because I don't know, they expect guests a lot, or maybe they were expecting this mouse to return with something, or, you know, it seems weird that they have this welcome sign ready to go, like they were expecting someone or something of import. And the mouse is like, oh my god, you've done this all for me? I mean, the egg says that, not the mouse. Goes, why would the mouse say that? And there's a little mouse in a baby carriage, and the mayor mouse has a wreath that he puts on the egg, and the egg's like, oh, this is amazing. And then the baby looks very angry. It looks like a very angry baby. But then the egg gives him a little smooch, and the baby mouse is like, oh my god, this is amazing. And then somebody, there's like another baby on a fishing pole, and he just starts kissing all the babies. And after a while, he's just like exhausted from kissing all these babies. And then there's this old granny mouse who comes up and she's like, kiss me, but she then points around, she turns around and is like, kiss me on my ass, and he's like, oh, I'll do it, and he kisses her. He doesn't even kiss her on the cheek, it looks like he kisses her right between the cheeks, which is nasty. She runs away all super happy. He's like, oh my god, I need some mouthwash or something. The mouse gives him a toothbrush and some toothpaste, and he's, you know, brushing his teeth along the way, and they just keep going. They leave the welcome area, get on a boat, and head through the village to this area. It's like, oh, there's all these pipes coming out of this thing. It's like, what is going on here? I don't know. This is just getting really, really elaborate. Oh, this is the chip. You see chips. It must be the chips factory where they make the chips. So why did he care about that one breaking when they make the chips in Mouse Village? I don't know what's going on. You got these people with little spear-looking things that are protecting the door. Like, okay, all right, look at me. I'm special mouse chip agent. So this guy was, you know, he's a big deal, this mouse that, you know, the egg messed with. And now we see another beautiful panel of the actual chips factory. And, you know, the egg is looking around, it's like, oh, chips. And he sees potatoes. He sees chop, 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 this one chopping the potatoes. He's like, oh my God, this is kind of scary. And then there's this elevator that comes down. It's like, okay, still nothing too crazy happening. They go up in the elevator to the top of this factory place. You see where the potatoes are put into this little device, and then they are chopped along this pad, and then they are cooked, and blah, 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 they become chips. And then, oh, snap, all this time, it seemed like they were friends and getting along. The mouse pushes the egg into the potato bin so that he can be turned into chips with the potatoes. But, of course, the egg does not get chopped, and he breaks through the glass. And he's like, no, you will not do this to me. And he's very angry. And his buttocks is very red at this moment. And he's on all fours. And he's like, this is not gonna happen. And then he gets through this line. And like, you just see all these mice are like, okay, we're ready to beat the crap out of you. And they try to chop him. And they try to bite him. They try to snip him. They try to slam him. They try to give him the evil eye. They try to pounce on him. They try to trip him. They try to swing a club at him. They try to legally adopt him, which is one of my, that might be my favorite thing in this entire part, because there's this one panel that is just like them all trying to do things to him, that he like gets a line of dashes through all these different things. One of them tries to allure him, because, you know, what's more alluring than a sexy mouse giving you the kissy kiss? One of them plays dead. That doesn't work. And then another one summons a fiery baby, which surprisingly does not work either. And while running away, the egg comes across this emergency weapon cab knit. I was like, weapon cab? And I'm like, oh, it cuts off. Oh, cabinet. That has a bat in it, gun, a ball and chain, all these various weapons. And he's like, haha, I'll get this. And then he just starts killing mice left and right. But then, immediately after that, this super buffed up Arnold Schwarzenegger ass mouse comes and just breaks his weapon in half, but he immediately grabs two knives and just dices this guy in a dozen pieces. There's no big fight. He's like, oh, you broke my weapon? Okay, I'll just get two more and kill you. Then he starts dicing more, and you see that this factory has now been leveled to a fiery waste. And another mouse in a chef's hat, whatever those are called, is now in a robot with various robotic arms. And they start fighting, but, you know, it's apparently a really crappy robot, because the knife he was using on the hulky, big, massive mouse is just cutting through the robotic arm, so it can cut through metal like it's butter. And so he's destroying that robot, and I think there are more robots coming. And you see that there's this one kind of overlord mouse watching this all happen in her little headquarters, and it looks to be that granny mouse that he kissed on the behind before. And there's like a cat in there, because in this world, cats are beholden to mice, apparently. So granny mouse is going down her little elevator from her special area, where you see all these tubes that seemingly have these mice that have been tested on, or they're trying to create some kind of super mouse or something. And she comes down to this area that has a tentacle monster, and it's basically a mouse octopus. So she gets up on this little platform and basically does like a warrior's chant, where she's just like, come on, let's do this. What is he saying? The warriors, can you dig it? I'm imagining her saying something like this: can you dig it? And then they drain the tank holding this mouse octopus, and now it's angry because it's getting dry. They put on this collar and plug it into it, and then she's able to control it with a gamepad that is the most just kind of, we don't want to make this look like any particular system, so it's whatever. The D-pad is right in the middle of it. And then the buttons spell M-O-X-Y. So I don't know if it's supposed to be that she is Moxie. I like that, though. And you can see now that she can control this mouse octopus. And we get back to the egg, and he's like, oh, I've destroyed all these robots. I am the king here. No one will defeat me. And you see this other mouse is running away. He's chasing after the mouse. And then what happens? who knows? Because at this point in the story, there are no more panels. I think there are a few more on Instagram, but what happens with the octopus? Oh, we'll only have to wait. But I really like it. I think it's fun and silly. And the art is just very, very charming. I love watercolors. And I love the idea. It's inspiring for me as an artist to see someone doing this panel a day thing. And it makes me kind of want to do something like that, because a panel a day is something that is definitely manageable. And when you are focusing more on charm and personality and not trying to make things overly detailed, it can really work rather well. Not to say that the art is bad. It's just, it's not super detailed. It's very simplistic, very cartoony, but it has a lot of personality. It has a lot of charm. It has a lot of character. It has a lot of life to it. It's just a very, very lovely little piece. And I'll have a link to the Imgur page as well as his, Terry's Instagram and his official website. But also at the bottom of the Imgur page, he has a picture of the mouse that inspired it. It was technically a rat that inspired the purple mice in the comic. She was 2 years old in the pic, and her name was Willow. Sadly, she passed away at some point. But yeah, I think it's a wonderful, delightful little story. So I hope you all enjoyed my retelling of it, and I hope that doesn't stop you from checking it out. Because it's definitely made better by the visuals. My retelling of it is pretty awful. But yeah, I was super pleasantly surprised by it. I just thought I'd check out a few of the panels. And I ended up going through them all in, you know, a few minutes, 10 or so minutes. In the same time that it took me to retell it all. And had a blast with it. Moving on to some anime. I've watched the first 4 episodes of Sakura Quest, and I wasn't exactly sure of what the series was at first. I thought, just based off the title, it's like, oh, great. It's another series that's taking place in an RPG, in a fantasy world that has RPG elements to it. Probably somebody gets transported to this area, but that's not at all what it is about. It's about this young girl who moves. She's from a small town, Yoshino, and she moves to Tokyo. She might have been going to school there as well, but she goes there in the hopes that she can just find work there, and she just feels like it's a land of a million opportunities. Koharu, her name. Koharu. And she goes there, graduates. She can only live in the dorm for a little bit longer. Her parents sent her her last allowance. And she's been on 32 interviews, and all of them have come back with, oh, we wish you the best of luck, but, you know, we don't have space for you or whatever. We're not looking for someone like you exactly. And she goes to a fortune teller a few times, and they all tell her that she'll be full of luck in her golden years. And she's like, what about right now? And she ends up getting this call for a job that takes place in this small town. She doesn't really know that it's as small of a town as it is when she kind of begrudgingly accepts it. And she doesn't know the terms of it really, or didn't care to read them. And what you find out is, one, there was a screw up in that the person they were trying to get, the old man who's actually requested it, wanted this older actress who was really big, I don't know, decades ago. But the two young men who work with him misheard him and requested someone else instead. And this happened to be Koharu, who is tasked with becoming the queen of this little kind of like tiny sub-village thing, this mini independent kingdom. And her task is basically to try to bring back life to this small town, get it on the map again, get people there, tourists there. And it's really just about, she runs into these other girls who are all of different personalities, as one would expect, and the real story is just about them all coming together. They end up moving into this same building together. One of them is really good at computer jazz and whatnot. Another one is kind of good at everything because she was a child actress and was also on some detective show, and she just along the way doing tasks here and there, she's able to put together costumes and props and do a lot of these little kind of minute things because of having to do them when she was trying to just make a living for herself and survive when she lived in Tokyo as well. But they're really just doing things that are trying to bring people to the town that they live in. And it's a pleasant little series. It's a slice of life series. It's from PA Works. It's a original title as well. It's not based off of anything, which is nice. But I think the best way to say it is, like, if you like slice of life anime, definitely check it out. It's really well done. It's very pretty. The art style is nice. There isn't a lot of fan service-y shots and weird angles, which I appreciate. And if you liked Shirobako, I would recommend watching it because visually it looks very similar, being from the same studio and whatnot. And the whole slice of lifeiness of it all is similar, though, you know, what the characters are trying to achieve is very different. A lot of the vibe is similar, but there's not as much. It's not as hectic as Shirobako because it's not like they're trying to meet deadlines and everything. Not really. It's a bit more fly at the seat of your pants because in the end, it's not really that important if they get anything done or not because no one's life is depending on it. It's like, whatever. It's not as important as getting an anime out in a timely fashion and all these other jobs that are happening at the same time. But it's nice and pleasant. Very nice little OP as well. So yeah, definitely check that out. And then I also checked out the first two episodes of Hinako Notes, which is, of all the series I've seen so far this season, it is the number one cute show about cute girls doing cute things. So if you like cute shows about cute girls doing cute things, watch Hinako Notes. If you don't watch it, because that's all it is. It's kawaii, kawaii, kawaii. It's all that. It's fine. It's a bit silly. Can be charming at times in a silly kind of a way. I think the main character, Hina-chan, is particularly likable. The other ones are just kind of silly. But I think there's something kind of sweet and charming and definitely innocent about Hina-chan and her desire to move from, once again, moving from a small town to Tokyo in an attempt to kind of open herself up because she's a very shy person and she's not really good at talking to people and she wants to join a theater group and just be more comfortable with herself and interacting with other people, which is a really kind of, you know, respectable thing to want and to desire. And she has this weird quote unquote ability where when someone's talking to her and she gets really uncomfortable, she just turns into a scarecrow and animals just flock to her. She's really good with animals, but yeah, there's not much to it. It's really just a, here, you want to watch a bunch of cute girls doing cute things. That's what it's for. I will say the second episode did bother me at times because There were a few moments where the framing was really weird. Not weird, it was creepy. And they did a lot of close-up weird angles on Hina-chan's butt. And I don't think they did it with any of the other characters, but it's just weird, unneeded, out-of-place, fan-servicey creepy shots that I think just took away from the series, because for the most part it's this very seemingly cute innocent series that then has these few shots that are just like, hey, look at her butt. Doesn't it look cute and soft and squish? Don't you just want to squeeze it? Don't you want to just rest your head on her buttocks? Like she has this little, not dream, but this thought when somebody's saying, hey, you can work here, you can work here, where she's going up to grab a book and it goes almost upskirt. And I'm like, oh my God, why are you doing this? Because she's moved into this little apartment building that is above a bookstore and coffee shop. And she runs into a few people who work there and live there, the manager or whatever, and then the bookstore employee and the coffee shop employee, who are all weird in their own ways. The coffee shop employee likes to wear a maid outfit just because she likes to wear it. The manager is another person who's a little bit older, who is part of the drama club, which is on hiatus. So they're going to create their own drama troupe. And then the bookstore employee just likes to eat all the time and eats paper from books because she loves them so much. She just wants to eat them, but she doesn't do this with everything she loves, just with books, because, okay, I don't know if she's paying for the books she's eating at the bookstore, but she just likes to eat paper and food and a lot of things. But it's fine. Nothing special, but it's not the worst I've seen. I just hope it doesn't keep up with the weird angles occasionally, because that's just, there's no reason for them to be in this particular series, and they're so infrequent that being in there at all just makes them stand out a lot more, and don't really understand that. And then on top of all that, I've been playing some games. Quickly, I'll just say that I went back to Paladins for the first time in how many months, I don't know. And I came to really realize how good Overwatch is after returning. Because I remember playing Paladins for a match or two when it first came into closed beta on Xbox One. I'm like, this is a solid free-to-play game. And a solid free-to-play Overwatch clone. Because it's very much so a clone. And then I played it again. And you'd think that maybe, given the time that has passed, that things would be even better. It felt worse. So yeah, I don't know what is going on with that, but yeah, it just made me say to myself, man, maybe I should just buy Overwatch. I think it's on sale for like $38 digitally, so I can not have to put the disc in, because Overwatch is just a lot of fun. I don't play it that often, in part because I would have to keep putting the disc in, but every time I do go back to it, I always have a lot of fun, even if I don't do particularly well. It's just a fun experience. And Paladins was kind of, the controls felt a little bit stiff. The horse riding was awful. And yeah, visually, I feel like, I don't know. It looks fine, but it feels like it looks worse, even though I know that can't be possible. But that was a little bit of a weird, disappointing experience. And then I've been playing Spellspire, and I can officially review it now. I like Spellspire, but I think it falls short in a few aspects compared to similar games. I'm not a huge fan of the way the battle system and all that works, in that you have a single selection of letters that you just have to keep reusing and creating words with. I prefer the way it's set up in LetterQuest, where once you use letters, they are removed. But also the thing that bothers me is that it's more so that your attack power and all that is more so based around the weapons you bring in than the actual words you create. So unlike, say, Scrabble, it is much more like Boggle, in that it's just about word length and not letter usage. So you don't really get any kind of bonus for using letters that aren't as common or harder to make words with. Whereas in LetterQuest, you do have specific points for each letter, so that, you know, using a Z is more valuable than using an S. But, you know, everything is worth the same amount in Spellspire, which may be to some people's preference. And I like the fact that in LetterQuest, you have different things that either they're just showing up on the board themselves, or the enemies you're attacking will affect the board, that there are different types of power-ups and things that happen to letters, like they will get frozen into place, or they will get a boost to them, or there will be letters that are cursed that if you use them, like they'll spread to other letters if you don't use them, or ones that are toxic that if you use them, you'll still gain the points, but then you'll hurt yourself at the same time. And I like all of that to it, because in Spell Spire, the way it works is really you have these various weapons that do specific damage, and enemies are weak or strong to certain elements. And in some cases, you'll have enemies that are of contrary weakness and strengths in the same level, so that it doesn't really matter. You will have ones that are stronger to the weapon you bring in, or and weaker, and vice versa. And that's just, I don't know, it's a little bit annoying. But I got to level 99. It's a 100 level tower. You're climbing this tower. And the dragon in the 100th floor is basically unbeatable right from the get-go. And when you fall to it the first time, it's like, hey, you know, there's this little area down at the very bottom where you can just kind of, you know, grind and get gold and do all that jazz. So why don't you go there for a while to get some better gear and whatnot. And even before that, you do have to grind through areas, which is a little bit frustrating because it's not that fun to grind. And the thing is about this little dungeon area, which is more of an endless area, that you get little quests to do, like kill so-and-so number of monsters, kill a monster with a palindrome, kill this many monsters with words beginning with this letter, etc. I don't like the fact that that is closed off until you reach level 99. I find that very frustrating and very annoying, because there's no reason to lock it until then. Maybe their thought is that, well, if we had this unlocked from the beginning, that's all people would play, because it's more fun to just see how far you can go and do these little side missions. And I actually think it's more fun to do that. But at the same time, you don't unlock weapons and new armor and new hats and all that unless you're actually climbing the tower, because those unlock, and they don't unlock, they unlock the ability to purchase them by reaching certain levels in the towers or starring a certain number of levels and whatnot. So it doesn't matter how much you would grind in the dungeon, you wouldn't be able to purchase more powerful weapons or really get that far or do anything unless you were also progressing in the tower. So I just think it's weird that that area was not unlocked from the beginning. And if it was, it was not noticeable. I went down because I could tell from the achievements that there was a dungeon-like area, and it wasn't there. So I just think that's a weird design choice that doesn't make much sense to me, because the times I had to grind while climbing the tower to get to level 99, to get to the 100th floor, actually, I didn't really enjoy the grinding because I just wanted to keep climbing the tower. And there were certain times where it's just like, well, I've already started everything to this point, and I don't have the right weapon for this particular next level, and I have to grind to get the money to purchase a weapon. And it just, it was a bit tedious. It's not a terrible game by any stretch of the imagination. I just really wanted it to be better than it was. It just left me frustrated in a few ways that I wish were a little bit different. But it's a solid game. There aren't many word games like this on Xbox One, which is where I'm playing it. But yeah, it comes out today officially. I think it's $10 with like a 20% off pre-order discount that is through early June or something. I can't remember exactly, but yeah. And then I also started playing Embers of Merim, which is this puzzle platform where you are controlling these two different creatures. One's a light creature, one's a dark creature. And the beginning, you are controlling them each on their own. So one's moving towards this great big spire from the right, from the east. And then another one is traveling from the west to it. And after I don't know, a half hour or so, you manage to bring both of them to this spire, and this creature comes out, and you get transformed into one creature. So they come together, these two opposing creatures, into one, and then they get some abilities along the way. The dark creature can slam through ground and knock loose rocks to the ground so that areas are more accessible. And then the white one can glide and run, can sprint. And then they come together. They still have all these abilities, but they also have this ability to become, I guess, embers. I think that's what they're turning into, but they turn into like these little orbs. And you then use these orbs to get through areas and turn on these switches to open doors and solve puzzles. And the thing about it is that when you turn into these orbs, because when you become the combined creature, you then have to control each orb independently with each analog stick and then move them at the same time. Like the game that always comes back to mind in these type of games is Schizoid for Xbox Live Arcade, which I don't think that many people remember, but I think also like Ibn Am had for single player a dual kind of analog control mechanic. But if you struggle with games where the few games that there are where you have to control two things independently with each analog stick, then of course Embers of Miriam is not for you. There's no point in even trying it because it will just frustrate you. But so far I've played through about maybe like 2 hours of it, and I've been enjoying it. I haven't found it to be too frustrating or overly difficult at this point. And the way it works is that when you transform into these orbs, you can only be in that form for a certain amount of time, and you can increase that time by running over certain like panels that basically refill your time meter, which is a few seconds or so. And you can only go so far apart from each other when in those modes, because there are also these little like fence-ish areas that allow you to just freely move through them, and you don't have to worry about transforming back into the creature, because those areas are more like puzzling. You have to try to figure out how to navigate through them, or they're just allowing you to reach an area without having to worry about the time limit. And when you have the orbs away from each other, the point where you will be transported back into your creature self is directly in the middle of the two orbs. So you have to do that when trying to navigate between platforms and making sure that you actually end up coming back into form on top of the platform and not over a gap or anything like that. But it's a solid game. It doesn't look particularly great. It looks like, I don't know if it's built in Unity, but it looks like a Unity-esque Unity game, like a mobile game. Not that Unity games can't look really good, but it looks like a basic Unity game, a basic mobile game that has been put onto consoles, which isn't, you know, there's not anything wrong with that. I think it's $20. But yeah, so far it's been a solid little platformer that plays around with this simultaneously controlling these two different things, which not many games do, because I think it's just kind of closing itself. I think games like that just know that they're going to end up closing themselves off from a certain segment of the platforming audience, because some people just won't be able to do that. But it's solid. And on top of all that, I have nothing else to say. So that will do it for today's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope you all have had a great week and have a great weekend. Once again, I'm your host, Mark Kuznez. Y'all can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Xbox Live, my anime list, and Steam at PX Sausage. And I actually got the domain name, which I thought was taken, and maybe it wasn't this whole time, but I was like, is this taken? And then I got it. So now pxsausage.com just takes you directly to pixelatedsausage.com. I wish I could get pxs.com, but I don't think the person who owns that is ever going to give that up, and I'm not going to pay extra for that. But PX Sausage is now mine, so that can just take you directly there. Not that that really is much more convenient, but I figured I'd just get it in case anyone ever search for that, given that they see my name in certain places. But yeah, the site is, of course, pixelatedsausage.com, where you can find this podcast, the other podcasts we have, like Pixelated Radio and the Pixelated Paranormal podcast, and the art I do, which I recently posted a piece that I finally got some time to finish called Lines Number 5. And I really liked the way it came out. There are a few things that would have changed looking at it now, but overall, I'm really happy with how it came out, and I hope you all like it too. People seem to enjoy it based off of early impressions and comments and stuff. But you can check all that out at pxsart.com. And if you'd like to get a print of any of that stuff, you can find them all over that page with links there. But you can also go to the prints.pxsart.com to check them all out as well. And there's already a print available of the new piece, so you can get a print of that if you like. And if you'd like to support the site in general, go over to patreon.com/pxs and support us that way with a buck or two a month. Really is appreciated. Anyone who's willing to do that. And of course, check out some other podcasts that are friends of the family, like the Sports Car and Lease podcast, co-hosted by Pixelator Radio's co-host, Rich Hall, who loves Project Cars so much. Can't wait for the new one. That can be found at scunleashed.com. The Crazy Sunshine podcast, which is hosted by Jason Steve, and is really good. And it's about anime. Nice casual show. And the last one was a bit of a gut-wrenching one, just because I put it on and then I laid down to kind of take a bit of a nap. I woke up maybe 10 minutes later, and 10 minutes into that show, I just kind of hear Steve choking up. I'm like, what's happening here? What's going on? And I would just say listen to the show, but you know, all my positive thoughts and prayers and vibes and all that jazz go to Steve and his young daughter's way. I hope it's a daughter. I'm now thinking, I'm like, yes, it's a daughter, right? It better not be a little boy, because then I feel like a horrible person. But yeah, I hope that everything just is sunshine and roses and rainbows from here on out. And that the only thing you have to worry about from this point on is about little baby pooping too much. I don't know. And then also check out the O&D podcast, which is hosted by Big Steven and company. And that will do it. Of course, if you haven't already, go over to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you want. This show can be found on iTunes and all your podcast listening places. So yeah, that will do it, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your day and all that crap. Bye.